Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Well, the college football season is officially over. We put it in the books with that national championship game between Notre Dame and, of course, the winner of that game, Ohio State. And now we talk about it with Tim Brando. He's joining us on Heartland College Sports. I'm Pete Mundo. Of course, you see Tim all the time calling the games on behalf of Fox Sports. And if you're on the YouTube channel, on the podcast, we appreciate you subscribing. And, of course, always appreciate our radio affiliates here as a part of the show. So, Tim, how do we fix college football? Because it feels like this sport is getting stuck between all the NFL madness.
It is. Pete, thanks for having me on. And I send warm greetings to you and to all my friends in New Orleans. There they are. I've got friends in Baton Rouge, New Orleans, and they are having the time of their lives. I can't believe that I was too far north of it in lovely Shreveport on the northwest tip of Louisiana, but I was. To fix it, it's pretty simple to me, really, and would have been very easily pulled off if you had had more than one television rights holder, which unfortunately the college football people decided to just do business with ESPN, only ESPN, and that's that. No one got the bid on this property at all, not Fox, not NBC, not CBS, not anybody. So they put it, ESPN did, where it was most beneficial for them, which is certainly their right. So I'm not being critical of them, okay? And I'm not being critical of them at all. You have the right as a rights holder to put these games where it benefits you. And it benefited them to put these games where they did and even sell off, or sublease really is the better term, a couple of games because they didn't want to get killed themselves by the NFL ratings on other networks besides theirs. They subleased the first two games of the four games played at the home sites to TNT, which Turner, for whatever reason, decided they would do, and they would just allow ESPN to provide it, the talent, provide the production, and they would just put it on their air. I don't think that worked out very well. It certainly didn't enhance their viewership. And I think those games were lost. A lot of people didn't find them. We're like, where's that Penn State where's that Penn State game with SMU? They just weren't, TNT had not covered college football.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of things that a part of this that needs to be fixed. But let me just say, overall, I'm very positive about what just happened. I thought that we have the most legitimate national champion that we've had maybe in the history of the sport. In the past, a loss to Michigan, a 500 team, at the end of the year would have likely cost the team a chance to play for the national championship. And not only did Ohio State have another chance, but they benefited from not having to play in the Big Ten title game. You know, having that week away, you hear the Buckeyes people talk about it now, you know, their story, Ryan Day's gone ad nauseum with it. And I get it. They had a extra week to sort of get their minds together and get their quest ahead to, right the ship after losing in embarrassing fashion to Michigan for a fourth consecutive time. But again, the games themselves overall on the campuses were exciting environments. I think we maybe should look into having more of those. But the easiest way to repair the problem with the calendar is by moving the calendar back. Okay, start the regular season. And that, by the way, that was another great aspect of this. Now, let's not get lost in the weeds here and forget how much better November was in the regular season for college football. Ratings soared everywhere. It didn't matter what game you were watching. The percentage of people watching college football was far greater this year in the month of November because you had 12 spots, not 4 spots. That's huge. Now, I think we can go to 16, and I think we will go to 16 in 2026. It won't happen this year, but I think it will happen in 26 because they need more money. But you start instead of August the 24th, which was week zero, I know because Devin and I were working a game on week zero. And if we had started it on August the 10th, 2 weeks earlier, they would have been able to probably have the national championship game on New Year's Day and reclaim New Year's Day as college football's big day. I think a lot of fans would love to see that. We don't need to have spring football anymore. They can have their workouts or OTAs, if you will. And I don't want to hear people say, well, you know, they are students. Wait, really? They are? Again, we're going to keep up that mantra? No. You have them report for fall camp a full month earlier than they currently would. And you prepare them as you would for spring football with a long fall camp and prepare them to start their season on the 10th of August or whatever date that would be on that Saturday that would be the equivalent of last year's August the 10th. That way you can get these games, including the conference championship. And I'm hearing a lot of people say, well, we don't need those anymore. Yeah, sorry, they're not going to give that up. Why are they not going to give that up? It's a revenue producer. And they need revenue, and they need more revenue, which is exactly why I think they're going to go to 16. You don't have to push it a week further back to have two more games involving four more teams. You don't. You just don't. So that's how you repair it. But, again, the issue here is you're only dealing with one network. You don't have a marriage here like we do in the National Football League of all the networks sharing in this and promoting this and doing so in a way that makes people comfortable in knowing where to find their games, even though they're on different networks. ESPN has every right to do the games and broadcast them the way they do. They pay an exorbitant amount of money. It is an exorbitant amount. And that's one of the reasons why there were no takers. And you didn't hear anybody really crying foul about the fact that they didn't get a chance to bid. They were not going to bid what the CFP was asking. And rather than, I guess, maybe embarrassing themselves and putting it out for bid, they decided to just, do it in their own covert manner and making sure that no one else had a chance to even get into the process. That's the unfortunate part for me, because I think the sport would be far better off if we had multiple networks involved, if we started earlier, and more games would be exposed to larger audiences and we wouldn't get into this competitive situation with the NFL, because the NFL wins every time. The NFL is always going to be the sacred cow that's taken care of over college football. That's just the way it is. And with the thing starting when it did and then ending when it did, you're right. It is somewhat on the back burner and doesn't get the historic promotion that it really deserves and needs. But that was a decision that the commissioners made in concert with the people at ESPN, and no one else had a chance to be involved in it. And that's a shame.
Tim Brando is joining us on the show. So when it comes to then, Tim, where the sport is at right now, we just saw for the second straight season for the first time in 20 years, no SEC team in the national championship. We have now back-to-back Big Ten champions. Mm-hmm. Where do you see the hierarchy in these conferences right now? Is the SEC kind of losing some of that shine?
Yeah, they've lost some of it, but they're still, the most successful college football conference of this generation. I mean, they are. But what the Big Ten has done now is they have shoved them to the back burner this season. Now, can you follow it up? Can you continue to have sustained success as the SEC did? As someone that was part of that incredible run of seven different national championships over a span of time that was 12 to 13 years, that's an amazing feat to have eight consecutive years where the national championship involved an SEC team. The one year that they lost was Auburn to Florida State. That was just an incredible run. You had four different championships. Now, granted, Saban carried a lot of the water for those top titles, no doubt about it, but he had help. Florida had two with Urban. LSU got its fair share of championships with multiple coaches. But at the same time, you look back at where they are and how they got to that position, and it was because of the great recruiting and the geography advantage that they had in the South and in the Rust Belt. They don't have that same advantage any longer because of the NIL and because of the transfer portal. So as the joke goes, everybody's getting paid now. You know, in the SEC, that's the running joke outside the Southeastern Conference footprint, is the alleged "you were cheating all along, now we can cheat too" debate. And that's been going on for some time. But I think it's great for the sport, and I don't mind players being paid. Now, we don't need guys like Carson Beck making more than a fourth of the starting quarterbacks in the National Football League, and that's a byproduct of not having guardrails, which need to be established. And that's what I hope that they're going to be spending some time on here in the offseason. It's my understanding that they don't plan on really changing much of anything based on the meetings that have been taking place so far, even with the seeding process, which is kind of a shame. They could fix that very easily. But I think they're going to wait and say, you know what, this was just our first sample size. If we're going to make any changes at all, we will do it come 2026. And one quick note, Pete, even though only one network has control of this current contract that is going to last for quite some time, that network and the CFP have not yet signed that contract. So that's something that's not been reported very much by anyone. It's something that I think bears watching in the coming months ahead, particularly here in the spring and those long dog days of summer when we wait for college football to begin and some changes, maybe even some realignment starts taking place. That deal has not been inked yet. Agreed to, yeah, enough that a lot of other networks have said, well, let them have it. That may be true too, but it's still not a done deal. And I don't know that anyone has really been reporting that.
Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
So that would mean then that, but theoretically then, there's got to be somebody else that comes to the table. And like you've been saying, that other party does not exist at this point.
Well, they would have to be willing to throw a lot of money. I mean, just an absurd amount of money to a product that is not showing, you know, that it's worth what was paid by ESPN. Yeah. So, you know, it would be a Hail Mary pass that would be completed if something were to change and that deal were changed. But to your point about it being under the radar, so to speak, and really it's a shame because college football is the second most popular sport in America. I mean, it is. But you've got, during the regular season, CBS, NBC invested, Fox really invested. Mm-hmm. Okay. And when the regular season ends and the championship games and those conferences are played, they're out of the mix altogether. No one's talking about college football at all, okay, except ESPN. And I know they're the worldwide leader. I'm reminded of that a lot by fans and by some colleagues of mine. But the truth is, not everybody's watching ESPN all the time. In the NFL, everybody's watching one of those networks all the time. And you know where you're going to be able to find games. And even the networks that aren't necessarily carrying said games are going to be talking about all the games. And in college football, if you're not involved in that sports postseason, you shut it down. Okay, you completely shut it down. You're not talking about college football at all. Why would you? It's not as if anyone at CBS, NBC, or Fox needs to be promoting ESPN.
Yeah.
You know, ESPN is, if they do anything really well, it's promote. But even they can't promote, nor can they carry all the games, even with that plethora of networks that they have. Okay, you tell me, why did they sublease two first-round games to Turner? I got the answer for you. They knew that they would get killed putting a college football game on opposite even a regular season game, much less a playoff game in the NFL. So that's why they did what they did.
Yeah. So now when you look at this, Tim Brando, from a Big 12 perspective, I mean, you talk about how the guardrails need to be put in place. But right now, I mean, you know, it's pay to play. You can basically buy a team. We see Texas Tech football right now doing great in the transfer portal. You know, you've got a big booster or two, a Cody Campbell type guy who's got, you know, mm-hmm. oodles of oil and gas money. You find that one guy or two guys, you're set, right? So how do you see this shaken down when it comes to the sport wanting to protect the blue bloods? Can a Big 12 school that maybe doesn't have that blue blood status cut through in this environment?
Oh, I think any of those schools could cut through. I thought, listen, we can't see the playoff this past year and watch what Arizona State did, my God, and not be impressed, okay? And I would argue that that game, especially the second half of that game, might have been the most compelling of any of the playoff games played. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was. And to know where that team was 2 years earlier and even a year earlier in Dillingham's first season, that's just nothing short of amazing. I know Boise State did not play as well as any of us hoped. I certainly thought they could beat Penn State, but they needed the Mad Dog to have a great game, and he didn't. He missed open receivers, and they were already keying on Ashton Jeanty. But even Boise State was competitive. They shouldn't hang their heads over the way they played. There are teams out there and stories in college football that are so much better and greater than any underdog in the NFL that ever makes it to the promised land. That's what makes college football special, is that when you're talking about a team being outmanned in college, you know, that's a team that's really outmanned. You don't see 30-point spreads or 28-point spreads in NFL games. You do in college games, and even in big games, championship games, you see that. And a team can come from just about anywhere. That's one of the reasons I gravitate to it so much. And the reason why I've always said, when asked the question, why don't you do the NFL? It's like, I'll do it when they ask me. If they have some extra games or they need some help, I did one this past year, a doubleheader week after I did a Friday game between Lincoln, Nebraska, between the Cornhuskers and and Illinois, which turned out to be a great, highly rated Friday night game. We tapped out, I think, at 5 million viewers at the highest moment of that. It was the third highest rated game of the week. And then that following Sunday, I'm in Tampa Bay doing Denver and Tampa. And I enjoy doing it, but I would never give up a college football regular season to do an NFL regular season. I just wouldn't.
Yeah.
I love football, but I don't love NFL football enough to give up doing college football. I just think college football is so much more fun. It's so much more explosive, dynamic, and the contrasting styles of the way teams play and the history of the sport being the way it is. That's why I gravitate to it. And that's those factors come into play. And I think we saw some of that, particularly that first week when teams were getting to play on their home fields. One of the reasons I wish, Pete, that they would change the seeding process is it would have been, for me, a lot better for both Arizona State and Boise State to have not been seeded and had the week off. I would have loved to have seen one of them play a road game and maybe one of them play a home game, okay, in the first round of the playoffs. I mean, could you imagine if an SEC or a Big Ten team had to go into the blue field for the first time, and if Arizona State not only had a chance to be competitive and maybe beat a Texas in a bowl game in a dome stadium, but to do it on the road, you know, in a Big Ten or SEC environment, I mean, that would have been fantastic. So there's a lot to like about what's going on. But the problem is we can't get the sport past a point where people within it aren't already throwing all kinds of dirt and cold water on its success. And that's what I'm seeing a lot of. I mean, yeah. After the first week, the media that was taking the most shots at the sport was the very network entity that has the rights to carry all the games. And I thought that was unfortunate. That made no sense to me. To take shots at Indiana and to take shots at, at SMU. Look, we've had bad games and non-competitive games in the NFL, in the World Series, and the NBA playoffs. Just because you have a bad game doesn't mean it's a referendum on the entire sport. And that's exactly what they did with that first week. Now, fortunately, they learned from that, because I thought they did a really pretty good job afterwards in terms of, being objective and talking about what's really good about college football's postseason. But I just thought it was heartless to take some of the shots that they did after week one. And of course, whenever the young people are in sports journalism today, Pete, follow the lead of the big dog. And so when somebody starts taking shots, then they feel like they're able to pile on too. And I thought that influence that ESPN carried from the first round of the playoffs that carried over was really unfortunate to the people within college football and to the CFP specifically.
And don't forget too, I know you'll remember this well, but leading up to that in November, you had the game day crew scoffing at the Arizona State Kansas State game and why they were picking it. Mm-hmm. Meantime, that was a huge game in Manhattan that weekend, and mm-hmm. they got a lot of blowback for that. I heard from the Big 12 offices that they called your mark called them and said, listen, you're one of our main partners here. We can't have you guys not knowing the significance of this Arizona State K-State game and scoffing at it on game day. They had a lot of problems this year.
Yeah. I mean, I think the quote was, why are we even showing Arizona State here? I think that was the quote, as I recall. I can't remember which one said it, but yeah, that was said, and it was terrible, just a terrible thing to say. And, the ESPN game day that I was part of would have never done something like that. And, you know, you just have to understand your influence. And I think at a certain point, this all began really, my thoughts and my critiques of it started last year when they allowed Commissioner Sankey to basically do an infomercial for Alabama to get in over an undefeated and top team like Florida State. Well, that's where it all started. And when no one really was able to get their attention, it just continued. It went right into this year as well, and that's unfortunate. But some of what they receive is over the top. Some of the criticism that ESPN gets, I think, is really over the top. And let me cite this since you've got me on today, because it's been in the news. Kirk Herbstreit's taken a lot of heat for good reason on many occasions. I've delivered some of it, to be perfectly honest, because I thought it was really underhanded to say what he did about Florida State and about Alabama that year. There were times after week one that I really did not like at all what was said in the aftermath of one of the games that was being broadcast that he was a part of, that I'm not really sure they should have been here type stuff. Indiana had an incredible year, and they had every right to be in the game. Now, by being in the game, you also have the right to lay an egg and have a stinker, which is what happened to Indiana. Those things happen. But the heat that he's taken over shedding some tears in the aftermath of the Ohio State game, that's way over the top and wrong. Because all of us are from somewhere. I used to take this kind of heat all the time when I was doing the SEC, and LSU would be playing anybody. LSU could be playing anybody. My oldest daughter went to LSU. My career started with the help of LSU on Tiger Vision pay-per-view cable back in 1981, 82. And then I worked in local television there and had great relationships. And one of my life mentors is Dale Brown. Everybody knows that. I'm an open book. People know my history. And so I took shots every time I called a game involving LSU where something really good was happening. And that's terribly unfortunate. But I sent Kirk a text just today, the day of this taping, saying to him that it's been a minute. We haven't spoken in a while. But I just want you to know that I'm praying for your family, for your wife, your son. And I can understand why you felt the way that you did. And you shouldn't apologize to anybody. We have a right to be happy for the people in our life that we love and care for and have taken care of since birth. And we have a right to be happy for where we grew up and maybe the school we played for. I didn't play college football, but I certainly grew up in Louisiana, and my career in many respects, even though I didn't get any sheepskin from LSU, was where it got where it did largely because of my association with LSU. And so we don't need to apologize to people for that. Those emotions that happen in the aftermath of a game, that's not affecting what he did objectively during the game. And the fact that some people get rankled by that or believe that's he's not worthy of being on a broadcast in the future because of the way he openly expressed his emotions about Ohio State, that's garbage. That's absolute garbage. And it's been my history with whether I was working an LSU game or if Spencer Tillman was with me working an Oklahoma game, okay? If anything, if you're biased in one direction or another because of your history with a school, it's probably you're more critical of that school or more critical of what they've done because you're so close to it. Hell, Kirk, I think, moved from Columbus, Ohio to Nashville, Tennessee to get away from some of the heat that he was getting in Ohio years ago. So some of that stuff is unfounded, unfair, and it needs to stop. It's a byproduct, really, of these babies right here. You know, that's when we've got an ability now to just go and tweet something or make a post on any social media, it empowers people to say really disparaging things. I've not seen too many sportscasters go after him, but I've seen enough on social media to know that it's wrong. And I support him and his thoughts about his team, what his son had gone through, what his wife had been diagnosed with, all that. So we need to cease and desist on that.
Well said. Tim Brando, last thing here for you. It's been a great conversation, as always, on college football. You said end the season, New Year's Day. I totally agree. Would you end it, as some have suggested, at the Rose Bowl every year? Would you move it around? What would you do?
I don't think it's capable of being moved to the Rose Bowl every year because I think there are too many bowl games. We have to understand the history of all those bowls, the Fiesta, the Rose, the Sugar, the Peach, certainly, and its involvement in recent years. They all have financial stake in it. I love the Rose Bowl. I got to tell you, of all of the hallowed, storied stadiums that I ever broadcasted from. It was sort of the last on the bucket list that I got a chance to go in and call a game from a couple of years ago. We did a UCLA-Utah game when they were both in the top 15 and were undefeated. It was awesome, absolutely awesome. And I've never been there on New Year's Day. I've never actually been to the Rose Bowl, even as a fan, on New Year's Day. But just going into Keith Jackson's house, which I still believe it to be his, and knowing that my friend and mentor Kurt Gowdy did games there before he did, and then to see the pristine condition of the stadium floor and the San Gabriel Mountains in the background, it's awesome. But I don't know that they deserve to get more than the other places, and the sport still needs to take its big show around the rest of the country. I think it would be financially not a smart move, first and foremost. And then secondly, I think you'll get the experience of what the Rose Bowl really is, whether you play a semifinal game there or a championship game there. And if it doesn't happen to be exactly on January 1st when the game is played, Pete, it needs to be near January 1st.
Yeah.
And the games that are being played that matter the most in the NFL are happening when? They're happening after that. Okay. They've extended their season to such a point that it's mid-February until they end. So let's go back and seize control of what we can have to get the most out of college football. And that's in and around New Year's Day. And that's when we can have, I think, control of the nation's media beyond just, you know, what ESPN controls. And I think we've already seen that if it comes to push and pull between choosing the NFL or college football to promote, it's always going to be the NFL, whether it's ESPN or anybody else. I love the Rose Bowl and I love that setting. But no, I don't think we should have it there. I know Joel Klatt feels differently, but I think it not only shouldn't be there all the time, but I don't think it's financially prudent for it to be there all the time. And these guys now, it's all about the money. You know, when somebody says, you know, I liked it better at 8, we're not going back to 8. Have you checked out that lawsuit? It's called, and have you checked out the fact that these schools are having to pay up because of that NCAA lawsuit that lasted for 15 more years than it should have, thanks to them, okay? It's called revenue sharing. And when revenue sharing starts, they're going to have to get more money from TV. How do you get more money from TV? More inventory. That's how you get it. And so it'll be 14 maybe first and then 16. It won't be going back to 8. Trust me, that's not going to happen.
No way. Well, Tim Brando, we are grateful for your time as always. Thank you for being here, and we'll be talking some hoops down the line. I know you're a busy guy right now, so thanks for fitting us in.
You got it, Pete. Anytime. All the best to you.
We appreciate Tim Brando on the show as always. Thanks to our radio affiliates, YouTube, podcast. You guys know how to subscribe, and we'll talk to you soon on Heartland College Sports.
Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.